Hey, welcome back, everybody. Time for another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Coming to you live from the campus of West Virginia University and all its affiliated faculty around the world here. It's the one show that sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and modern marketing practice with the one man who seems to straddle that line well, Michael Lynch. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how's it going today? I do try to straddle as best I possibly can. Sometimes it is indeed a challenge.
It is a challenge. Well, you know, because that's what this whole show is about. When I was in marketing a million years ago, it was the arts and crafts department. It was a bunch of creative people throwing things at the wall and seeing what would stick. Now we have to measure it as well.
Well, measuring it is something that really in the 21st century helps marketers prove to their chief financial officers, their CEOs, et cetera, really the value of what they're doing. Back in the days when it was billboards and magazine ads, et cetera, it was very difficult to sometimes determine what worked and what didn't. I think one of my favorite quotes still is that we know that half of our marketing budget is wasted. We just don't know which half.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, today you're going to tell us, who did you bring along to give us some advice today here?
I am incredibly pleased today to have Bonnie Harris. Bonnie Harris is an award-winning adjunct instructor and an expert in integrated marketing communication. Bonnie, how is everything today?
It's just great. It's so great to be on. And I want to throw that back. I want to mention Michael also is an award-winning adjunct professor. So,
well, thank you for pointing that out. I really appreciate it. And another thing that's very important about Bonnie is she's also the founder of Wax Marketing in St. Paul, Minnesota. And before we get done today, I would love to hear more about Wax Marketing. But first, I want to talk about persona today and personas. What is the traditional definition of persona in an integrated marketing communication platform?
One of the reasons that I love talking about personas is that they have transformed over the years. Traditionally, a lot of food marketing companies and bigger brands would create semi-fictitious representations of their best customers. And that's really traditionally how personas were created for brands, Betty Crocker being probably the most famous persona in the U.S. And an interesting thing about Betty Crocker is that a survey a few years ago showed that she was so prolific that 60% of U.S. people thought she was an actual person. So that's how powerful they can be. Today, and for the use of integrated marketing, we really use personas in a different fashion and much more like digital marketers do, in that traditional personas really focused a lot on demographics and descriptives of these customers. Whereas in IMC, we really look at the behaviors that are relevant to what we're trying to get done, although that also usually has a name and a face so that we can feel like we get to know that person, ergo the name persona. We're looking at what are they doing and how are they interacting and how are they engaging. And that's really how we define them in IMC.
I know traditionally a lot of brand managers and people like that have tried to create a personality for their brands. In the age of social media and in the changes that we've seen in marketing, are we still seeing that brands are trying to give their products a personality?
I mean, I think that that's kind of a little bit of a separate topic, but you're right. I mean, the whole thing with social media and also with integration is that you have to be authentic. And that hasn't changed that much over the years, except that in the past, we really had very few channels in which a brand was represented. You know, you had broadcast television, print, and a few years ago, blogs started coming. Now there are a million different channels or networks that we represent, and we have to be authentic and familiar across all of them. Having a strong personality that no matter if you're seeing this brand on a billboard or you're seeing them within Twitter or Facebook or on a traditional broadcast ad, it's still familiar. You know that personality. And as we know as marketers, the more familiar something is, the more we like it. So that's really how the kind of the brand personality comes about. A persona is really used to target an audience and to try to get them to do something for you. So digital marketers will create personas and segment based on persona information, for example, to sell people a purse So if we have a high-end luxury purse, there's definitely a description of their key customer, a semi-fictitious representation of that customer, that they know if they really can create messages and marketing mechanisms that are focused on the behavior of that particular group of people or that particular persona, or which is a subsection of a segment, they can have better results. So that's really where personas come in. And I think as channels have proliferated, funny thing about integration is that we need much more narrow audiences to get it done. You can't be all to everyone when you're sometimes dealing with 20 different places you have to meet them. So we really get very specific and very narrow in our descriptions of our target audiences, and that's where personas come in. Even to if you're reading anything about theories around audience of one and really selling to one person, which is kind of the AI really far-reaching side of digital marketing, I mean, eventually we'll kind of all be there where everything is so personalized to that one person that we're getting the ads that are specific to us. Right now we can't do that yet, particularly in every area of IMC, so we use personas.
That is wonderful, Bonnie. I really appreciate you explaining to that. It almost seems that we've gone from focusing on what the brand is supposed to look like to really what the customer is supposed to look like and really focusing on that. How are personas different, though, when used in integrating marketing communication?
Well, and I think that the point you just made about what the brand definition was a really good one, because in IMC, we use the definition of brand that it is the perception of the brand in the mind of the customer. It's not the brand personality that is designed by a marketer sitting behind a desk, like in the old days when they'd sit there and create this brand. And they had only a few channels to send it out to so they could say, here's us. And we all said, yes, that's you. And we accepted that. Now a brand is created based on the engagement that you have in social media, for example. And we all know how brand personality and brand perception, which is, again, our definition of brand in IMC, can change in a heartbeat. When you think about a viral crisis in social media, or even the brand of an individual, like, to use a terrible example, like a Bill Cosby, that can change in a heartbeat based on information that comes out. Once again, we really want to affect the type of behavior that our audiences, not only for brand awareness that our audiences will do to create better brand awareness. And so, like, for example, you know, the whole influencer marketing technique is really around peer-to-peer branding. We want our customers to define us in the best possible light. And when we're marketing to them in a way that really knows them and knows how they want to engage with us, it just becomes so much more effective.
That's great. Now, how do personas really tie into influence marketing or influencing behavior is what I meant to say.
Influencer marketing is really interesting because what we've seen is social media has become so much more powerful. The impact of peer-to-peer marketing and recommendations and reviews. I mean, anybody who's doing healthcare provider marketing, as we are at WAX, we do quite a bit of healthcare and healthcare IT, knows that reviews for doctors have suddenly become just massively important. If you're a cosmetic physician, for example, you can really get ahead of the pure organic impact of reviews by trying to use influencers. So, for example, I work with a dermatology practice, and we have brand ambassadors who are very authentic, but they go into the doctors. They have cosmetic procedures. They tweet about it. We do Facebook Live, all those kinds of things. And because they have a particular reach and fan base, they're really able to drive something that would have been purely organic in the past. And again, it still has to be authentic, but it gives us a little bit more opportunity to really kind of craft what we want out there and have that perception still be defined by the customer.
You know, in the medical world, it almost sounds like it's been turned on its head. I mean, I'm in my late 20s, and I know that, you know, in my early years, choosing a doctor, it's like the doctors got the opportunity to choose who their patients were going to be. And now it seems that that's been turned upside down to where the patients are really identifying what their needs are and really demanding from the health community fulfillment of those needs. Are you finding that also?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's, if you read anything about the rise of the healthcare consumer, and there are a lot of things driving that, from, you know, the increased amount of co-pays and flexible spending accounts and all HSAs and all those things that came out a few years ago, to the fact that now healthcare is the number one expense in households in the U.S., more so than mortgages. So we're looking at not only this huge expense on our insurance plans every month, but looking at a lot of it coming out of pocket. So we're price shopping. We're looking for the best value for our care, whether it's a knee replacement or it's kids' tonsillectomy. You're looking at reviews. So it's become much more like consumer-based marketing than it ever used to be. And a lot of the healthcare providers and even the plans are having to drastically change how they engage with patients and with plan members to try to get that business that they've never done before. In healthcare marketing, and again, my work is primarily in healthcare IT, not with directly with plans and stuff, but we're seeing a lot of use of personas to really kind of define a particular patient. And a great example of it is plans get incented by the government now to have a higher rate of flu shots, for example, or colonoscopies. And so those companies that are driving kind of engagement within that are really using personas to sort of reach that target market of people who need a colonoscopy, which would be a more mature individual over 55. And how do they react to IVR, and how do they react to email or text, and how can we get them to schedule that test or that treatment that's proactive versus, you know, reactive post-illness. I mean, that's kind of diving into a little bit of healthcare stuff. But yeah, I mean, personas and that whole idea of very, very focused, personalized marketing and even the audience of one is becoming incredibly important in healthcare. So that was really great point, I thought, Michael.
Just before we go to our break, we could pick this up after the break, but why would we want to use personas with integrated marketing communication?
Just shortly, much better results. Much better results. And we can talk about that after the break of why it's better results and how you can adapt to kind of using them without taking forever to build them, which is the key.
And let's just stick with healthcare just for a second.
Sure.
Is there really a market or really a channel for one-to-one marketing or one-to-few marketing in the healthcare field?
Absolutely. In fact, a lot of marketing technology is now using artificial intelligence, natural language processing, and some of those kinds of techniques to watch how people are engaging with their campaigns and to literally tweak and change individual outreach messages. You know, I have one client that does campaigns for most of the big plans in the U.S. They literally have over 1 million touch points a month. So a touch point being like a text to you to say, hey, it's time for your flu shot. They can absolutely adjust that one text based on your previous interaction with it. And so that's where everything is really going to go with marketing, I think.
Excellent, Bonnie. Thank you so much. About time for a break. When we come back, we'll get back to understanding really why we'd want to use personas in integrated marketing communication.
All right. As we leave you pondering that question, let's let you ponder one other point here, that West Virginia University has the only online data marketing communications program of its kind in the country. They focus on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making, the kind of things we're talking about today. The Data Marketing Communications Program prepares you for your career by learning the innovative tactics from award-winning faculty like those today. Learn more at dmc.wvu.edu for the Data Marketing Communications Program at West Virginia University. All right, I got my pencil and paper out, ready to take notes here.
Okay.
Okay, then. And a big difference, not a big difference, but a difference between what Bonnie does is and what I do with West Virginia is I am part of the data marketing communication part, which is we are the number crunchers. We are the number nerds. We are the ones that really can explain to an organization what is happening with their marketing and the value of their marketing and how to focus their marketing down, which is a little different than integrated marketing communication, but both of them obviously have a great deal of value. So, Bonnie, let's get back to it. Why would we want to use personas for integrated marketing communication?
Well, one of the things that integrated marketing really focuses on is the customer user experience, or at a very kind of basic definition, the five stages of the buying cycle, which every single purchase online, even if you think of a purchase as like getting an interview with a journalist, everybody goes through first that they have a need, and at the very end, their post-purchase behavior, and then there are other steps in there from like searching for alternatives, the actual buy, all that kind of stuff. So if we know how our target audiences are behaving within each of those steps, and we know the behavior, or we know the messages that we can use to motivate that behavior and get them to move faster through that, then we'll reach our goals that much more quickly. So for example, if I'm launching a new brand, most of my work will be around awareness of a problem and getting that brand as one of the solutions evaluated when you're trying to solve that problem. And so if I really know how my target market behaves when they're looking for, say, you know, I just bought a robot vacuum for the first time. And it was really interesting to me how the digital marketing interacted with me as I looked for that robot vacuum, and it got more and more personalized as it found out more about the fact that I had pets, that sort of thing. So the more we know, and that's where you data guys come in. I mean, you give us the data and show us how people that we're focused on are really interacting and behaving as they move through these cycles. The more we know about them, the faster we can influence them, and the faster we can get them to the next step, and eventually to, of course, the purchase. So that's why personas help us get really, really specific. We're not really building personas that look like a full holistic picture of a person. That's a traditional persona. An IMC persona, or a persona used in digital marketing or in integration, is really focused on the behaviors that are only relevant to our goals. So they're super small. They're very, you know, they're nuggets of information. They're much easier to build. I would go to a data person like you and say, show me some trends within these demographics of how people behave and convert when filling out a form, for example. That would help me understand what kind of behavior. I just did a campaign for an IoT software company, and what we realized when we did that very question was they don't like to fill out forms. So I could have spent a whole lot of time building these forms and stuff, but I know my persona doesn't like to fill out forms. So I've got to find a different tactic to meet that need. And because I know that, I get there faster. Does that help answer the question?
I mean, no, it really does. About, and kind of follow up on that, how can you create good personas quickly?
Again, you go to the data guys. If a marketer has been working within a brand for a long time, some of it is already there. Digital marketers may already have personas that can be adapted for other channels. For example, if you're wanting to do more brand awareness, or it's a brand extension, and so you've got to really get a lot of communications out there, or PR, you can usually adapt something that a digital marketer might have used for a similar audience to get social media engagement going, or to get influencer marketing going. But again, you're adapting that persona based on the goals and or KPIs that you have. So you're adapting the persona to be focused on the behaviors that are relevant to your goal and nothing else. And that's why we can do it so quickly. But I mean, the availability of data analytics and the ability to just slice and dice any way we want. You know, we used to do these huge data warehouses that would build all these demographics, and we'd have all this information about our age and, you know, what kind of clothes we wore and all of that. And the whole reason for that was we wanted to try to predict behavior as accurately as possible. But now what you guys give us with Google Analytics and then moving into, you know, much more sophisticated dashboards is we can just say, well, what's the behavior? We don't have to predict it or try to guess anymore. So demographics have really taken a back seat, and a lot of people will tell you they don't often matter except for making you feel a little more familiar with your audience. Hopefully that answered your question.
It does. And something that just kind of popped when thinking about this is there's got to be a difference between personas for B2B marketing versus B2C. I mean, exactly how would that differ, and what would you have to do differently?
Well, when you think about, you can say B2B and B2C. I mean, B2C, obviously you're focused on an end consumer. Depending on the size of the purchase, the complexity of that buying cycle will change. It's much more complex if you're buying a $100,000 Bentley than it is if you're buying a broom. But in B2B, you have a lot of different roles that are involved in the purchase typically, and the B2B cycle is usually typically a lot less self-service. So when you think about somebody selling e-commerce, an e-commerce software package to a manufacturing company, the salesperson, the actual physical person is a lot more involved typically in that deal. If you're buying the Oracle suite, which is, you know, can be millions of dollars, the salesperson and the SE, the systems engineer, are going to be much more involved in that. There's a piece of it that's done offline. And when you're building personas, you have to really recognize that and understand the behavior of your target audience, not only how they interact online, but how they interact offline with the people who are involved in that much more complex buying cycle with a salesperson. And also, when does that touch point occur? The whole challenge in B2B today is how far can we get people through the buying cycle before we have to get our really expensive salespeople involved. We're trying to increase efficiencies of the sale. We're trying to increase the lead gen quality that we can deliver so that when we really do engage that salesperson, because in B2B, those people are typically pretty knowledgeable, pretty expensive, very consultative, and they don't, you know, you don't want them sitting there sending out catalogs. So that's kind of the difference. In a persona that's B2B, you're usually looking at a much larger variety of roles. You're looking at influencers within the buying cycle who actually directly impact the purchase. So in e-commerce, for example, that's the researcher, and they have very different jobs. And you're also looking at how can I increase the interaction online and the self-service interaction as much as possible to really reduce my cost of sales. It's a much different kind of practice, and it takes a little bit more time. For a persona, like for the robot vacuum, I'm probably a pretty easy person to decipher. You know, I bought mine on Amazon, and Amazon knows everything about what I do on there, and they probably were able to very quickly personalize the deal, which I try not to think about too much, but as a marketer, we know that we're all being manipulated, whether we want to believe it or not.
Yeah, I'm afraid that Amazon knows a little bit too much about me, too. Real quickly before we go, what are some of the ways you have to adapt your message or adapt your approach when you're really working with different channels, such as public relations, social, whatever, influencers,
right,
whatever?
I mean, obviously, when we're sending a press release, it's going to look a lot different when it's going out to the media than it is for that daily tweet that's mentioning the brand. So in IMC, we work with something a lot that's called One Voice. And again, that's going back to that authentic personality that you brought up earlier that was such a great point. And in fact, I'm going to include it in the next presentation I do because that was a really good tie-in. But you have to translate it for the medium so that when you're watching a TV commercial, obviously it's going to be a different experience than when you're looking at Facebook or Instagram. Really what it takes is trying to keep that voice and that brand familiar throughout the different channels, but translating it so it's very palatable to whomever is receiving it in that medium.
That's great, Bonnie. And once more, I want to remind everybody that today's guest was Bonnie Harris with Wax Marketing of St. Paul, Minnesota. And Bonnie, you want to tell us a little bit about Wax Marketing?
Sure. We were founded in 2002 as an integrated marketing practice. Back then, nobody knew what it was, and it's gotten a lot more popular since. We work a lot with B2B companies, primarily finance, IT, healthcare, software companies, who are mid-sized and looking to grow very quickly and usually competing against much bigger brands. We do some consumer stuff, but it's mostly B2B. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, thank you, Bonnie. And again, I want to thank Bonnie Harris for being my guest today. Thank you all for listening.
Thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you by the good folks at West Virginia University and the Funnel Radio Network for at-work listeners like you.